Good evening, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of the Hellenic Observatory Research Seminar. It's very nice to see so many of you here this evening to hear and listen to our guest. Our guest today is Yorgos Avlonitis. Professor Avlonitis is a professor of marketing at Athens University of Economics and Business. Athens University of Economics, I think, is probably the shorthand version of it. And he's also a visiting professor at the University of Strathclyde, where I think he also spent some time in a previous incarnation as a lecturer before going back to Greece and establishing himself there at the university. He has served on various important academic councils at his university, but he's also served as a fellow and in various other capacities on various other august bodies of a more professional nature to do with marketing, et cetera, which I'm sure you can tell us more about in your presentation. Today's talk is on nation branding and nation competitiveness implications for Greece, and I know that Professor Avlonitis has a lot of provocative thoughts, which he's going to share with us for about 30 to 40 minutes, and then we'll have plenty of time for discussion. Welcome, and I hand over to you.
Thank you very much indeed. Thank you very much for the kind invitation to deliver this presentation today. Well, as I was saying to Professor Economidis, although I have prepared a presentation, I really don't like very much, you know, just going through what I said there. So I prefer to have sort of some more interaction. So before I start, I will start asking some questions. I mean, looking at this title, what do you understand? What it comes to your mind? Nation branding, nation competitiveness.
Stereotypes.
Stereotypes. Okay.
Exports.
Exports. Okay.
Image.
And linking that image to the economic reality of the country.
Okay. Anything else?
I was intrigued by the question, so I came.
Well, okay. It's amazing how many disciplines are dealing with this nation branding. We can find research papers in the area of diplomacy, in the area of political sciences and economics, of course, in marketing. And basically, the whole idea is that as a concept, this nation brand is linking to the competitiveness of a nation. If you start doing a literature review, you will find plenty of definitions about nation branding and plenty of definitions about competitiveness. It's amazing. I mean, basically, I'm not going to spend just reading all the definitions, but it's interesting to see the variety of ideas around these constructs, these concepts, as we say in marketing. Basically, this presentation is based on a doctoral thesis that I supervised that was completed in 2016 about nation branding and nation competitiveness. And this research gave me an idea which has a lot of implications for our politicians. How many of you are Greeks? Okay, so it's a nice, the audience is split. I ask that because from this research, I came to certain conclusions about Greece. That's why I was wondering how many of you are actually will understand more clearly what I try to say. Anyhow, let's start from some basic ideas. You know the word branding, of course. We are talking about branding. And branding is one of the most interesting concepts and constructs in marketing.
Because basically what marketeers try to do is to build a sustained strong brand. I don't know if you are familiar at all with the branding issues, but I can tell you, for instance, that today the brand of Apple has been valued over 170, 174 million dollars, which means more or less the GDP of Greece. Do you know what exactly that means? This means that just to get the brand Apple, not the infrastructure, no offices or nothing, as far as infrastructure is concerned, just the brand, you have to pay $174 billion. So you can understand how important it is to have a strong brand. And talking about that, one of the huge problems of the Greek economy over the years was the fact that Greece did not have well-known branded products. For the Greeks who understand the word Hima, and Fason, Sakodrafti, instead of building our own brands and our own products, we were selling them with very limited added value, because a brand can give you what we say added value. So a lot of people now say that because branding is so important, so we need to see it in the context of a state. And there are some people that they say, yes, we can apply that. Others say, well, it's completely different nation branding and the branding of a product. As far as, and as you can see here, for instance, there are various arguments. I don't want to go through that because I don't want to waste the time. Basically, to show you that some say that, yes, it's different nation branding from the branding of a product. They say, for instance, the limited distribution of the commercial brands as opposed to the global presence of a nation, or the limited theory of the multiple levels included in country branding. I mean, take, for instance, the brand of a country. How many stakeholders are involved there? The government, local authorities, business, NGOs, non-governmental organizations, the inhabitants of the state. So at all this, they act autonomously. So it's not very easy to create this unified sort of concept of branding. So that's basically what my colleagues, various colleagues, say here. And of course, there are various definitions about nation branding. Let's talk about the shortest one. Nation branding is a field of theory and practice which aims to measure, build, and manage the reputation of countries. Some people said about reputation and image and so on. Let's see another small one. Nation brand is the unique multidimensional blend of elements that provide the nation with culturally grounded differentiation and relevance for all of its target audiences. We will see all that, how that builds what I can call nation brand construct. But as you can see, there are various definitions on that. But let's see how important nation brand is. You see, what is the purpose of actually building a nation brand? To reshape national identities, to embrace political, cultural, business, and sport activities, to increase a nation's competitiveness, to change or strengthen a nation's image reputation, to promote economic and political interests domestically and abroad. So there is a scope for nation branding. And we need to start from somewhere if we are going to study and measure it. Because the problem is how to measure it. And measurement it's the most challenging task here. See how we try to measure it, not only ourselves, but other colleagues as well. We have here the various dimensions that came out of this, from all these definitions. So, country brand, people spirit, environment, resources, history, and so on. Anholt, he's the most famous sort of consultant guy that dealt with nation brand. He was the first. He started producing this nation brand index, where they tended to rank countries on the basis of a nation brand. He says that nation brand consists of tourism, exports, governance, investment, immigration, culture, heritage, people. So more or less, here we have exhausted all the ideas about this nation brand. So to us, and this is where we based our research, the basic dimensions of nation brand include economy, we're talking about exports, tourism, science and technology, and foreign direct investment, nature, landscape, geography, environment, culture, history, art, music, sports, people, governance, the way the country is governed, governmental policy, and so on, I'll come to that, plus brand ambassadors, media, immigration, and diaspora, celebrities. So all these dimensions, aspects, form what is called a nation brand. I said, how are you going to measure it? I mentioned before the work by Hildebrand that actually evaluate the brand, the value of a brand. And they produced this sort of reports showing the values that each brand actually holds. As I mentioned before, the Apple has a value of $174 billion. So there is this concept of brand equity, the value of a brand. And if we transfer this knowledge about brand equity to nation brand, we're talking about brand equity refers to the touchable and intouchable internal and external assets or liabilities of a nation. Nation brand value is the total sum of nation brand equity that is created by people, firms, government, products within a country. And basically, the way we define nation brand is as a conspicuous profile of a country that is shaped by the country's prevailing brand aspects. And which are the brand aspects? Those that I showed you here before. So that's the way we approach the nation brand. And here I mentioned various approaches about how you measure brand equity, consumer or behavioral research-based brand equity, where you ask consumers about the value of the brand. And Anholt, for instance, when he produced these rankings of nation brand for the various countries, he actually followed this approach, asking consumers in various countries. But I tell you, there are a lot of problems with this way, because you cannot, for instance, measure export orientation with two questions. You have problem of validity and reliability, as we say in marketing and in the social sciences. So, however, he produced these rankings, and this is one of the reasons why in this doctoral thesis we did not use primary data. We used secondary data. And I will explain afterwards why we use the secondary data for this kind of research. And of course, there is the common or financial-based brand equity, where we have various ways to measure brand value. I don't know if any one of you are familiar with these brand valuation methods. There's a lot of work here done. And of course, Hildebrand, for instance, is the most famous company that actually evaluates the value of a brand, and also Brand Finance, another London located here. It's Brand Finance is located here in London. They produce the nation brand ranking, and they give a value to each country, following various sort of these methods. This is an exciting subject, by the way, brand valuation. And there is a lot of scientific work behind that. But as a matter of fact, you might have heard ISO, the International Standards Organization. They have actually created ISO process how to value and evaluate a brand. So you can understand how important it is. And let's take the most simple way to understand the importance of what I'm talking about. Nowadays, in this globalized economy, we're full of takeovers. A lot of companies take over other companies, take over other companies. So the whole globalization and the globalized economy is full of mergers and acquisitions. Correct? Okay. Or franchising ideas. You are full of McDonald's here, not only you and we in Greece, and so on and so forth. Right. My question is, how are you going to evaluate your company when someone wants to buy it? How much are you going to charge to give it your brand as a to a franchisee? I'm talking about extremely simple but extremely important practical issues here. Not theories, business. And now I'm supervising another thesis, not about nation branding, but about brand valuation. And we are going to the Greek Stock Exchange. We will try to get certain companies there to see what is the value of the stock exchange and what is their brand value. And also, we are going to get, hopefully, we start now this doctorate research, hopefully we will find companies that have been taken over. We read on the newspaper such and such a company was bought by 40 million euros. I want to go there and ask what sort of brand equity valuation method was used for someone to estimate that you have to pay 40 million euros in order to buy, to take over this company. So you can understand the important issues here. Real business issues. So, let's go back to nation branding now. Consultants, academics, international organizations have helped me to measure that. And as I said, one of the first was Simon Anholt, that he tried to take into consideration six constructs: export, tourism, government, investment, immigration, cultural heritage, people, and try to develop these sort of rankings that he actually produced since 2008, I think. Mark Fetcherin, also, he developed the Country Brand Strength Index on the basis of exports, tourism, foreign direct investment, immigration, government, environment, and tried to produce some sort of rankings of countries on the basis of these issues, forming what's called nation brand. José Rojas Méndez in Spain, and also his professor at McMaster University in Canada, he did something extremely simple and clever. He asked international students in his university, what do you think about nation brand? And then he put down their answers, which included, as you can see here, economy, geography and nature, tourism, culture and heritage, society, science and technology, government, and so on. And as I said, there are a lot of organizations. Brand Finance is located here in London. It produces these nation brands. Future Brand, also Country Brand Index, GfK, Roper Public, marketing research company, cooperates with Anholt. It's producing this nation brand index. And Bloom Consulting, a recent company established in Spain, they also produce a country brand ranking. There are more consultants in this sort of area, try to consult governments and countries of how to improve the nation brand. So there is a lot of work on the consulting side, and not very much work on the academic side when it comes to nation branding. Let's go now to another complicated construct: nation competitiveness. Here again, we have a lot of definitions. The economists, they see competitiveness in terms of cost and production factors. We in marketing see competitiveness in completely different, format. And as a matter of fact, I personally follow Porter's work. Porter is a Harvard professor. He actually studied a lot of nations, and basically he tried to see what is what makes countries to be so attractive to foreign direct investment, and basically why some countries are doing better than others. So trying to provide answers to these simple questions, he came up with this, what he called the famous diamond of national advantage. He's talking about four conditions. Factor conditions, the nation's position in factors of production such as skilled labor or infrastructure necessary to compete in a given industry. Demand conditions, the nature of home market demand for the industry's product or service. Related and supporting industries, in other words, the whole infrastructure of business within the nation. And firm strategy structure and competition. So basically, what he tried to do is to take really the pillars of the economy and ask himself how these pillars actually help a nation to compete internationally. So simple. Again, a lot of definitions of the nation competitiveness, as you can see here. The most famous, of course, is the World Economic Forum. Now, in Davos, they are there, a lot of prime ministers and foreign ministers and finance ministers and so on. And as you know, the World Economic Forum, they are producing this competitive report every year. Greece, in the last report, 2017-18, takes the seventh position among 137 countries. We're not doing that well. Anyhow, let's hope that things will improve. Of course, the international management development in Switzerland, also they are working on these competitive rankings. So we have these various definitions and rankings and so on and so forth. And basically, let's go to our model. So our model is our nation brand equity, which consists of exports, media, diaspora, or immigration, foreign direct investment, safeguarded cultural heritage, tourism, science, governance, and environmental performance. To us, these are the basic dimensions that came out from the literature review and from the work that has been done so far. And what we try to do is to link nation brand equity with nation competitiveness. And for nation competitiveness, we use the Global Competitive Index produced by the World Economic Forum. And as I said, in order to study this relationship, we used secondary data, and let me explain the methodology. As I said, for instance, Ann Holt is producing the rankings of nation brand by asking consumers. We thought that it would be better to use secondary data. First of all, there is a more objective point of view compared with primary data, because cross-cultural differences may affect perceptions of the respondents in case of the primary data. Also, a longer time period of examination. Secondary data sets are available for many years. In this particular thesis, we got data from 2008 to 2011. Also, a bigger sample of countries. We use 80 countries. So can you imagine to carry out research asking consumers in 80 countries how long time that will take and how much money you need to spend in order to study nation brand in 80 countries by using primary data. So we're using secondary data. And I'm going to show you the sources that we use for this secondary data. So the total population we have is 194 countries in the globe. From those, we got those countries that, number one, there was we could find secondary data for all the variables that we wanted to study. And of course, the representatives of the sample was also extremely important. So we came up with 80 countries, 4 from Africa, 22 from Asia, 34 from Europe, 19 from America, North and South, and Australia. So we have a representation from the 5 continents and the total 80 countries, and we collected data for 4 years, 2008, 9, 10, and 11. And this is how we measure these variables. I'm going very quickly because, okay, this is a methodological issue, but I have always to measure those of you that you are doing a PhD or you finish your PhD and so on. You know that methodology is extremely important. Just exports per capita expressed in dollars. A media nation brand perception index, we got it from Airways Communication. This is a company that's producing this index. Immigration, net immigration rate, average annual number of immigrants per 1,000 population from the United Nations. Foreign direct investment from the United Nations data. Environmental performance from Yale University that's producing this kind of index. Culture from UNESCO, tourism from the United Nations World Tourist Organization, science, we use a science score from an image journal at country rank produced, and they cite how many papers have been published and so on, and research papers and reviews and so on and so forth, and governance. 6 dimensions of governance from the World Bank, including government effectiveness, control of corruption, voice and accountability, political stability, regulatory quality, extremely important, and rule of law. So this is how you actually have a government managing properly the country. And in this governance ranking, Greece is not doing very well either. These are the descriptive statistics. The median mean standard deviation for all these variables. As you can see here, looking at ketosis, we don't have parametric data. We have a normal distribution, and that's why we use non-parametric statistics. Because, as you can see, the our variables here contain non-parametric data. There is no normality here, with the exception of a couple of variables, like, for instance, environment. But when it comes to exports, foreign direct investment, tourism, we have a lot of... we don't have normality in our data, so we use non-parametric statistics, as you can see. The interesting thing was that all these mean values were tested statistically to see that they don't differ from one year to another, so there is a consistency there. And another thing that we did, to start with, before we go to what we call it partial least square, I don't want to go to statistics, but we use a lot, it is quite modern now in marketing, the structural equation modeling and path modeling. Anyhow, I mentioned it. Forget about it, but we have to use certain statistical approaches in order to analyze data. But before that, we did a simple correlation here. And this correlation was the reason that I wrote an article in the Kathimerini newspaper
And I got this lovely invitation from you, and I thank you again very, very much. Because basically, what is amazing here, and I would like to discuss a lot on that, and also have your views on that, is that we found an extremely high correlation between governance, the way you govern the country, foreign direct investment, tourism, competitiveness. Governance, tourism, foreign direct investment, exports. I don't know how familiar you are with statistical analysis, but when you have a correlation of 0.8, where the maximum value you can get is 1, when you have data from 80 countries for 4 years, it's absolutely amazing. In practice, what that means, that exports, tourism, and foreign direct investment are twins and
triplets.
They are like that. See that practically. Exports.
If you have people visiting your country and they are extremely satisfied with the things that they've seen, or even they test it, if we talk about food, you can understand that they become your ambassadors when they go back to their country. So exports. Foreign direct investment. They are coming to your country because they realize, to start with, that you have a serious government. That's why we said here, governance, tourism, foreign direct investment, and exports. To me, that was, although practically someone might say, big deal, we know that, it's okay, let me at least say, I have proved it. But let's not leave this finding just in a paper. Let's see what practically we can do about that. That is another point I want to raise straight away. But let me again say something about, well, we use this methodology, PLS, partial least square. Anyhow, that's our model, the path model analysis. You see how the national brand equity is correlated with the global competitiveness index, and how the national brand equity also, all these are reflected there. This is a reflective measure, as we said, versus formative. I mentioned that for anyone who understands, but it's not necessary to understand. So this is a reflective approach which shows this correlation here in this path model, which again, the same model applies in the 4 years as well, so it's steady, this model. And that's what I'm saying here. I'm doing very well, eh?
You're doing okay, you're doing okay.
Yeah, you see the experience. And sometimes I say, how long is it going to take? Well, 5 minutes, but 6 months, it depends. It depends.
The implications of the study, as I said before, I probably you understood so far from whatever I said, that the main practical implications of the present study refer to the policy of the state. It is clear that nation branding connects to the competitiveness of a country at the global level. It could be used as a strategic planning tool by any government that wishes to maintain or improve its country's international competitive position. Putting nation branding into action assumes an extrovert-oriented governmental policy that will trace all actions around the axis of global competitiveness, exploring all positive characteristics of the country, aiming to improve all weaknesses and transparently communicating progress to both internal and external audiences. And let me say that. So to me, extroversion of a country, as expressed through nation branding is not limited to exports, but is reflected also on governance as a prerequisite for the attraction on foreign direct investment and tourism. Nation branding is primarily a political decision related to national strategy, and as such, the state is the main stakeholder. So this is, let me use the expression, the scientific approach of it. Analyzing scientifically data, doing scientifically our literature review, and coming up with this conclusion. Let's go now to the practical implications for Greece, where in an event organized by Hellenic Observatory, and we thank you again very much for the invitation. So let's see what these results say for Greece and the Greek government. Food for thought and discussion. Which public institutions should be responsible for the improvement of the Greek economy's and profession and consequently competitiveness? What do you think? Let's ask the Greeks first.
And I can see you are young people as well, and you are the future of Greece. Yes. Never mind if you are staying working here. Diaspora is an extremely important for Greece as well, and we measure it.
I would say every level of government. So, I mean, you would expect the Ministry of Tourism to have certain something to do with it, but also I would say the regions of Greece.
The regions.
So the regional authorities.
Right.
And maybe the municipal authorities would actually should have an active role in this as well.
Anything else? By the way, these findings are not related only to Greece, eh? There are 80 countries there. I'm a Greek, I did the research in a Greek university, and I'm talking to a Greek initiative, Hellenic Observatory. That's why I'm talking about Greece now. But you can talk for any country. So out of these results, something came up, which applies to all nations.
Different institutions. Sorry, my bad English. I'm from Argentina.
Oh, welcome.
Thank you.
By the way, you are one in all those 80 countries, by the way, Argentina,
yes,
from South America, right?
Different public institutions, in tourism,
right.
Minister, maybe.
Right.
Export or financial or economic,
right.
In each topic, maybe.
Okay.
I understood, but I can't fluent in this.
Never mind, we understood what you said. So for each one of those that we found are related, export, tourism, and so on,
exactly.
You should have some sort of public sort of institution assisting the country in these respects, right?
I'm not quite sure what we're looking for. What is meant by institutions here that we need to look at? Is it government, private versus public, academic versus non-academic, business versus
well done. Anything you think, anything you think that should improve, that it should improve this leakage that exists between government, foreign direct investment, exports, and tourism.
Give us some options. To
it's all right. Yes.
You got, I think, two or three slides ago that we had the correlation of these four things.
Absolutely.
But it's only a correlation, or you have a cause and consequence. So if you know that you have the cause as the governmental or the cause is tourism, you could focus more in the one thing that one will reach the others and will make the answer for a pressure, I think, easier to think. Because if you are only on a number of correlation Maybe you cannot focus on the best. If you have only one option to do, you can maybe not focus on the best thing.
Right.
Do you have this? It's you got only the correlation, or you know it has like a cause consequence order. If you know that the if your government is going well, then helps tourism, and tourism helps.
Absolutely. Foreign direct investment, yes, so and exports.
You got a cause consequence, or it's you got only the correlation. Sorry.
No, basically, what this proves is that these constructs, tourism, exports, and foreign direct investment, should be seen as one. Do you know? I'm sure you know the term. How can I say? The synergy. One of the loveliest concepts I learned study management. Synergy. One plus one plus one, not equal three, 103. So my argument here, through these correlations, is the synergies that exist between those three constructs. Foreign direct investment, tourism, and export, which means by seeing that as a total approach, the result is not going to be 1 plus 1 plus 1, mm-hmm. but it's going to be 103. Have you come across to the term synergy? Mm-hmm. Don't you think that is an extremely interesting concept to create synergies? 1 plus 1 equal 5 in the most simple sort of... So that's basically what I'm talking about. I'm talking about synergies here and how we can utilize this kind of synergies or create, not utilize, create this kind of synergies. That's the basic argument here.
So, perhaps if I may, we don't know what causes the synergy. In other words, I take your point to be that we have a sequence of correlations. Things are correlated together, etc. But there might be a deeper factor causing this. It might be level of economic development, GDP. So you might be, you have governments or governance, exports, tourism, and FDI, and they are interrelated. But the explanation of what varies may be quite simply level of economic development.
We have studied that.
And
the results we got, these 80 countries, we split them according to the five levels of the World Economic Forum. They say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, different development stage. And this works in all stages.
Have you gone beyond correlation?
Yes, we go to this model. Well, I don't have it here, but yes, we went. And we've seen these interlinkages between the aspects of nation brand and competitiveness. They are highly correlated in all stages of development, as you said.
Since we've got a few questions, since we've got questions coming, then maybe we could just take a few more questions. Vasilis, you had a question you wanted to ask.
Well, so I wanted to make a suggestion on the question there about the institutions, but can I just clarify something? So the passive request, basically, you have a conditional correlation between branding and competitiveness, conditional on the factor loadings of the covariates.
Right, yes. Yes, PLS, that's exactly what it does, yes.
So then, I understand that this goes a bit beyond the correlation. It doesn't look for causality, but it has a structure of how the things correlate and conditional on that. You examine a correlation between the two policy variables, the branding and the competitiveness. But I think outside the method, one can ask, so, you know, putting the same question, I guess, differently, it's like, on how I can influence my components and the synthesis between the components, maybe what I need to fix is, so like I shouldn't put my money in tourism to create the capacity and the synthesis, but actually I should put my money on, let's say, education to create people who have the capacity to create the synthesis in education and exports and FDI. So that second type of question is not answered on the, you know, with the evidence we were presenting with.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, if you look at the this is only a small part of the thesis. You see, in the total model, we have the resources. How the resources are correlated with the nation brand equity components, and how they link to competitiveness. And we have also more variables measuring competitiveness, for instance, the GDP of the country. So we have a much more, broader model. So we have examined all that. At all these models, per stage, as has been defined by the World Economic Forum. So there are many things there. But the purpose here, I think it came from the paper that I published. That's, I thought, to stick to that. And basically, I come with some sort of propositions here, looking only at the correlations for the purpose of today's presentation. Right? I'm not presenting the whole world, but you're absolutely right. Behind this constructs and components of national brand are the resources. So we studied in this structural equation modeling resources, nation brand, competitiveness. But I didn't want to make things more, because I knew that I was not going to make a presentation to a university, to a scientific seminar to present all my model, you know what I mean. So I picked certain parts from the research just to come up with what I'm going to say now.
What are you going to say now?
Okay, let me see. And I think this is the beauty here.
Let's see the beauty.
Yeah. The way I see it.
The way you see it, through your eyes.
Right. Let's start with tourism. The main public institution responsible for Greek tourism is the Greek Tourism Organization, EOT, which was founded in 1929, operated under the auspices of the Ministry of Finance. In 1950, it was restructured and operated under the Ministry of Government's Presidency, as we said. In 1989, the Ministry of Tourism was established. It was operating until 1996, monitoring the activities of EOT. During the period 1996-2004, EOT was the only public institution dealing with tourism, as there was no relevant ministry. It's a laugh. In 2004, the Ministry of Tourism Development was established. In 2010, the Ministry of Tourism Development was ceased to operate, and again EOT was placed under the newly founded Ministry of Culture and Tourism. In 2012, an autonomous Ministry of Tourism was established again. In February of 2015, the Ministry of Tourism was ceased to operate as an autonomous ministry and became a part of the new Ministry of Economy, Shipping, Infrastructure and Tourism. In November of 2016, the Ministry of Tourism was reverted to its separate role and is currently monitoring the activities of EOT. That's about tourism. Let's go to exports. The main public institution responsible for the promotion of exports and foreign trade was the Greek Organization of Foreign Trade, OPE, that was established with the Act of 528 in 1977, was active until 2014. Then, along with the organization Invest in Greece, that was responsible for attraction and support of FDI, Act 1996, became host of a new organization that was established with the Act 4242-2014, a name as Greek Agency of Investment and Foreign Trade, Enterprise Greece. Today, this agency is operating under the auspices of the Ministry of Economic and Development. And here I'm coming to the great laugh. During the 7 years of crisis in Greece, 2009-2016, the Ministry of Economic and Development had changed name, structure, content, and responsibilities 7 times in 7 years. Do you know in Greece we have kiosk? You know the kiosk? If you change the responsibilities, the products, the position, and so on, every so often in a kiosk, even a kiosk cannot survive. Never mind a country. Just, I said, a historical you. That's the essence of my today's argument, right? Economy, competitiveness, and shipping. Development, competitiveness, and shipping. That's ministries. Development, competitiveness, infrastructure, transport, and networks. Development and competitiveness. Economy, infrastructure, shipping, and tourism. Economy, development, and tourism. Economy, development. Today. Can you survive? I don't know. Really, I don't know. It's amazing. Just going through historically. From these correlations. That's why the purpose was not the scientific side talking about the models today. But basically these correlations let me think. And let me study further. Completely different from the Nation Brand in PhD thesis. So what we see? The state, change all the time, a lot of problems. And what I propose? Legislation concerning the number of responsibility of ministries. Any amendments should require consent of the parliament. If you want to change a ministry, responsibilities, personnel, and so on, bring it to the parliament and get a consensus on that. But what happened? Every minister, every prime minister is changing the ministries and placing there, you know, the country, the members of the party. I mentioned that to Professor Economidis, and he said to me, this is happening probably in other countries as well. You think in this frequency?
I haven't done any correlation studies myself, so I don't know.
No, no, I'm talking about the changes in the ministries.
I know, I'm just saying I haven't studied all these countries, so I wouldn't know. I just made a comment that, you know, ministries do change.
I was absolutely amazed when I've seen that, though. Because any decent state, I don't think will change. They are not changing the name of the ministry. They are changed ministers. Do you know how many education ministers have changed over the last 7 years? 8. Do you know the tragedy? Everyone is coming there, is coming and becomes a minister. They try to implement his or her own ideas. The victim, the Greek education system. Anyhow, so there is explanation for everything, unfortunately. Existence of a cohesive strategic vision that will shape directions about the future of the economy as well as rational and measurable objectives for the evaluation of the effectiveness of the respective ministries. Do you know, another idea came to my mind. In the business, we evaluate the managers, don't we? And you cannot survive unless you reach your goals. Why not evaluate the ministers?
The prime minister.
The prime minister, of course. No, I'm very serious about
evaluation. Excuse me. Evaluation of ministers is conducted by the prime minister, institutionally speaking. He's responsible for evaluating.
Yes, but I'm talking objectively here. Evaluation objectively. That's the idea here, that I propose a new ministry for what I found from this simple correlation. A ministry responsible for the current account. So the economy, you have the public finance, and you are evaluated on that after 3 or 4 years, depends for how long you have been minister. Okay,
And then you have the ministry, which is responsible for the current account. So Avloniti, you became minister of this ministry in 2010. Okay. When you took over this ministry, our current account was surplus, minus, whatever that was. Now that you finished, what was your performance? Objectively. The same with public finance, the same for all the ministers. Why not start having measures? You see, in business, we talk about KPIs, key performance indicators, to evaluate managers. Why not to evaluate our governments on objective data? That's what I try to say here. So, that's my proposal. Ministry of Foreign Trade, Investment and Tourism. Responsible for the current account. What's the role? It will formulate a comprehensive strategy focused on industries and markets in which our country has competitive advantages. In order to increase exports, foreign direct investments and tourist revenue, while promoting at the same time excellent cooperation among public and private sector institutions active in their respective fields. That's the role of this ministry. And I propose three general secretariats. It must be three general secretariats. Strategic export marketing. Some of you might say, marketing. I'm serving this discipline for more than 40 years now. I can tell you it's the most misconceived scientific discipline on earth. And the tragedy is the most important scientific discipline. You cannot survive as a company, as an economy, without marketing orientation. Marketing is not promotion, as people think. In 40 years in this field, I never had been teaching advertising. I'm teaching product policy, innovation, international marketing, export marketing, sales management, how you organize your sales. That's basically my fields of expertise. It has nothing to do with advertising. Advertising, of course, it's part of what we call marketing strategy, but it's not marketing. So basically, everything started with me 50 years ago when I was reading a book by the best ever to me teacher of management on earth. He lived for 94 years, Peter Drucker. He said in the early pages of his book with the title The Practice of Management in the early 50s, the company has two and only two functions, marketing and innovation. Innovation and marketing. Marketing to know what the company, what the customer wants, and innovation to produce what the customer wants. I'm asking my postgraduate students, my MBA students, what is the purpose of a company? And 99.9% of them, they tell me to make money, to make...
Should we take a few questions? Well, can I ask you just to show us the three general secretariats and wrap up so we can take a few questions? Because there are a couple of points that I think we need to discuss.
Okay, give me that
2 minutes.
1 second. So all my students say to make money, to make profit, and so on. And then I ask her, if you don't have a customer, are you going to have sales? Of course not, and no profits. So basically, the customer is the number one. And if you look at the macro marketing, which is another scientific discipline in marketing, you will see why the state-controlled economies have absolutely failed versus the free economies. regardless if you like communism or capitalism or what have you. Because the freedom of doing business and the freedom of choosing the products that I want, this is what leads to economic development.
Okay.
Well, I haven't finished, but I can...
Well, we are running out of time, so we need to be able to have a bit of a discussion. So.
Well, basically, strategic exports marketing, strategic tourist marketing, strategic investment, just to go very quickly, why we need these three secretariats? We need a balanced approach towards the country's extroversion. Because we start promoting tourism, people, they think that as we have in Greece is good for, to have a fun and go to Mykonos, Psarou, and so on. And nothing about the abilities of Greece to produce products, high-tech, and things like that. So what you need a balance. That's why you have to have these three general secretariats. General Secretary of Strategic Export Marketing, develop a comprehensive realistic map, plan for supporting exports, reinforcement of the offices of the commercial attachés abroad. I proposed at some stage to educate commercial attachés, because all the comments I have been talking about, they told me that our commercial attachés are, as they say in Greece, are alu-alu. Initiations to solve long-term problems of bureaucracy and funding, which we have in exports, unfortunately. Efforts to assist Greek exporting companies to strategically define target markets abroad and a way to penetrate into them, which way you are going to export your goods, and to adopt their market strategy, product price, promotion place to its market's conditions. Tourism. Coordination of the initiatives given the peculiarities of the complex nature of tourism, of course, incorporation of tourism into the general program concerning extroversion of the economy, long-term strategic planning for tourism, including development of alternative forms of tourism, development of a comprehensive marketing plan that will strategically identify specific markets and target groups, differentiate the tourist offering according to the polymorphous demand of the huge tourist market. And strategic investment, development of a complete plan that will include simplification of the legal framework about investment, facilitation of permission granting process for business, assurance of financial tools available to investors, promotion of the comparative competitive advantage of the country in specific interest to carefully select international investors. Provided that these three GS make coordinated efforts, important synergies, that's what I'm talking about, can be developed that can contribute to the improvement of the extroversion competitiveness of our economy. Results could be reflected in the current account balance. That's the end of it.
Okay, thank you very much. Vasilis.
Thanks. I very much like the kind of policy conclusions and recommendations. Yeah. Personally, I would think this is a step in the right direction rather than the full solution of things. I think there's many other parameters and synergies, as you mentioned. Also,
okay.
Don't matter. But I really like both the general guidelines and the specifics, so I'm signing up for it. However, can I just question a bit the conceptualization of the branding as it went to the critical application, but also as we discussed it in relation to the three recommendations. So if I had answered differently the question you asked in the beginning about branding and stuff, then I would say something about recognition, yes, or when you recognize the Apple logo or the Dell logo here. And then for the national level, it would be a question of whether we're talking about recognizing the country, yes, or kind of everybody knows Jamaica, Haiti is not very well recognizable. Recognizing products of the country as a second thing versus recognizing one single product or associating a product with a country, like, I don't know, champagne with France and whatever. And this, if you think of branding in those terms, this is very different from what you're presenting. And I wonder whether in order to get to the high competitiveness, the high performance, the resilience, balanced current account, and the things you're alluding to, actually you need to, as a first step, actually look at your hair and say, you know, I need to brand my champagne or my feta, or and I need to create better reputation about my human capital and, I don't know, support ICT activities, and which then takes you not to the kind of grand center stage ministry solution, but rather to something which is much more, operates like a business, and it's sort of like, you know, a development agency that tries to promote specific sectors and activities at a much more micro scale. So if you have any views on that latter, if it fits into the picture you presented.
Yes, of course, because as I said, here, basically, this ministry will assist all this cooperation between private and public institutions, organizations, and so on, making this promotion, because the basic thing behind that is to identify what our competitive advantage, in which areas we need to support and promote, not only in terms of promotion, but you have to have the infrastructure in order to deliver what you promise. And you talk about awareness, of course. You cannot have market share, and you cannot conquer a market unless they know you. So all that are interrelated. That's why I'm talking about a ministry that has this exactly objective, to promote the Greek economy through tourism, exports, and attracting foreign direct investments in the areas that we want to develop. That's why I talk about synergies here.
Could you just identify yourself, Angela, when you ask your question?
My name is Angela, I'm a PhD student here.
Oh, very good. Good luck to you.
Thank you. I want to build up on Vasilis' comment. So I do take on the point about having a ministry kind of coordinating the synergy between the private and the public sector. Agreed. I was wondering that in the Greek context, where we have a lot of informal networks, and part of our economy, a big part of it is an informal economy, something like marketing, part of the informal economy. So I was wondering if we should allow some part for informality between, you know, kind of the local producers that are creating synergies between themselves. You know, we have another student here that's working on, you know, small enterprises and, you know, this kind of synergy between producers. So my real question.
Fantastic.
Is,
yes.
Yeah, no, but the problem here is how much of a status framework can be flexible to actually accommodate all these kind of informal networks that are created in the regions of Greece. I'm guessing about the state, that's what I'm saying.
Let's talk what I mentioned about when it comes to exports. Reinforcement of the offices of the commercial attaché, because you need the commercial attachés abroad to assist you, to come and tell you exactly who are the distributors, what sort of companies will be interested for your products, blah, 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 right? Initiations to solve long-term problems of bureaucracy and funding. Efforts to assist Greek exporting companies to strategically define target markets abroad and a way to penetrate into them, to adapt their marketing strategy to each market's conditions. Everything based on our comparative advantages. But only if you have an overall view, you can see that. Otherwise, you know, we're going to work like in our agriculture sector, as you know, where we have a very small, you know, each one has a few acres and they try to produce and sell it. So no, you need what we call economies of scale. So we have to see it a little bit broader. But in this context, if you agree on that, but they should be placed on this overall way of seeing things.
I'm not an economist or a marketing person. There's a lot of this that I agree with as a sort of outsider, but I'm wondering whether there's a problem in democracies with doing what you're proposing, because ultimately you elect the ministers, you elect people who are in charge. That's actually a form of evaluation. So there is an evaluation system in democracies. If you don't like what they're doing, you're not producing, you vote them out. But aside from that, the problem is you can't sustain this kind of strategic thinking in democracies because ultimately the ministers or people in the cabinet make these kinds of decisions, and their decisions are very often not very rational. And you're supposing that decision-making in the government is going to be relatively rational, and that's often not the case in a democratic system, especially nowadays when we've got a lot of populism that is going with the gut rather than with the head. So I'm just wondering how you would reconcile your proposals with the democratic process.
Well, I would say it's okay with the democratic, but not with the populist, because these populist ideas have led to serious problems in Europe and in other countries.
Right, but populism is part of democracy. I'm just saying that in any democracy, there's a turnover in the people and government who make these decisions, and these people are often not competent in the portfolios that they're overseeing. And the model that you're proposing, which I think makes an enormous amount of sense, presupposes a lot of competence and a scientific understanding about how markets work and so forth and so on. But that's not what why these ministers are elected.
I agree, absolutely agree with you. But the problem I have is the following. Since I was a student, I remember when I studied management, I remember that they were saying that one of the best principles in management is the right person at the right place. And my argument here that it is about time for the people that govern any country to be selected on the basis of their CVs. And I'm not talking academic CVs, I'm talking CVs. In other words, they know exactly what they are doing, number one, and number two, to be evaluated when they finish their job. In other words, the way you run a well-run business to run a country. In business, most of the time, you take the right people. And in business, most of the time, you evaluate these people. Why not having this system at the government level? That's my argument. Okay, I might be out of, utopistic or what have you, but I still believe that. It's time to have the right person to the right place, really. Because I believe, really I believe, because I have been involved with businesses over the last 40 years. I have been a university professor working in business. So I can see what good business means, what bad business means. And when I take this knowledge up at the upper level, at the government level, I say to myself, okay, utopistically say, okay, why not what I've seen at the business level not to see at the government level? It's not difficult to have the right person to the right in the right place and having these people been evaluated.
But the question is actually saying the evaluation is the result of a political process, and that running a country in your model is like running a business, but in fact the nation state is not a business. It has a multiple, you know, variety of different stakeholders who want something else out of the nation state, so it's not exactly the same thing. Anyway, let's take one last question, Mikhail.
Yeah, I just want to build on this gentleman's point about the functioning of government and a major problem that ministries have faced in Greece over the course of the last few decades is the fact that there is very high turnover of staff. Of course, governments change, staff is very quickly turned over. Of course, there's also a lack of expertise embedded within those ministries over time. So my question is quite simple. It's how, in this new ministry, would you establish the continuity of staff over time and therefore the continuity of expertise over time, which would be necessary to allowing the ministry to fulfill its long-term function?
Very good. Do you know what the Troika said to the Greek government? You have to develop a system for your general secretaries that will be there for a long time. Do you know what's happening up to now? Every time the minister changes, the secretary changes.
Yes.
So I'm talking about changing the whole way of seeing things.
But how do you establish that? It's a really difficult thing to do. How can you make that?
Okay.
We need to be very careful when we vote for people.
But sometimes we're not.
Yes. And do you know what Kennedy said? That when the people that they don't know things, the ignorant people, as he said, they vote, works against the interest of the society. So, okay, do you know what is amazing nowadays? I can press a button and I can find out who everyone is. When I leave from here, you can put down, say, let's see, Avlonitis. I heard Avlonitis, let's see what Avlonitis is. Why did we do that when we come to elections, for instance?
Yes, I completely agree with you.
With
respect, it's slightly different, this question. What I'm asking is about ensuring the continuity of staff in key ministries.
But that's easy. If you establish the right people in the right place, if you develop this sort of evaluation schemes, you have a system where you don't change every time a minister is changing, the continuity is there.
Yes, I agree, but how? it's very difficult.
Just a simple legislation from the parliament.
Right.
I mean, Troika asked for it. I don't know if you know that. But Troika, Thesmi now, you know, we changed the, you know, Troika became Thesmi. They say that you have to develop a public organization,
yes.
And the public institution should operate with permanent secretariat, permanent directors, and things like that. And they go through an evaluation, which is a joke. The evaluation system that is done now, it's a joke. But never mind, it's still there. The word evaluation came into the mouth of the Greeks that they never had before. Because they say you have to evaluate. And I was looking now a list, the people in the agricultural ministry, all of them have been evaluated. 100% all of them have been evaluated. Of course, the evaluation is okay, but it's an evaluation. So a first step has been done. Okay, I mean, you cannot change things from one day to another, but we need to start from somewhere.
I agree with that.
Is it a comment or a question?
Well, I'm from Canada. And
you were in one day in Canada as well.
I say that because the comment I'm going to make might sound like I'm from the U.S., but this is a widespread. Our former prime minister was explicitly and systematically opposed to using scientific or empirical evidence to formulate policy. And in fact, just to give you an example, he abolished the Canadian census system, was one of the best census systems in the world. He abolished the mandatory census system because he did not want to be bound by data coming out of the census. So part of the problem in a democracy, and I think this is a worldwide phenomenon in a lot of democracies, is a lot of politicians do not want to be bound by evidence. They're making policies. And I'm not saying this is your problem, this is our collective problem. But it is a hurdle that has to be overcome in implementing what you're proposing. I think it makes a lot of sense.
And on that note, thank you very much. We shall end this evening's proceedings. Before I thank you, can I just make a brief announcement about the next seminar, which is going to take place on Tuesday, the 6th of February, in this room at 6 p.m. The speaker is Jesse Vunvaiki, who's a senior economist in the Economic Analysis Department of the National Bank of Greece. And she'll be speaking on the topic of the effects of economic crisis on Greek entrepreneurship. And another event which I want to announce is on the 27th of February at 6:30. We have a public lecture by Minister Nikos Papas, Minister of Digital Policy, Telecommunications and Media, one of these ministries that changes name quite often. And he's speaking on fake news, propaganda and social media in Greece. It promises to be a lively evening. So we do welcome you along to that as well. That's a ticketed event, so if you need a ticket, Polly is the person to contact through the HO website. Thank you very much for your presentation.
You
as you can see, you've got a very lively response, and thank you again.
Thank you very much.